It's been described as one of the largest financial heists in history. Malaysia's one MDB scandal saw billions of dollars siphoned from Malaysian taxpayers and end up directly into the pockets of the rich and powerful. One of those pockets was, it's alleged, the former Prime Minister Najib Razak, who was ousted over the saga. But the money flowed more widely than that. According to the US government, some of that stolen cash ended up financing big-budget Hollywood films like The Werewolf of Wall Street, The Wolf of Wall Street, not The Werewolf, The Wolf of Wall Street, and brought super yachts, a Van Gogh and a Monet. Yet it's the jaw-dropping story of one Malaysian businessman, a fellow called Joe Low, as the puppet master of one MDB, that is at the heart of this scandal. And it's those connections that Wall Street Journal reporters Tom Wright and Bradley Hope have zeroed in on in their new book. It's called Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, Hollywood and the World. The co-author, Tom Wright, is in the Breakfast studio. Tom, welcome to Breakfast.
It's great to be here.
This is a ripping read. It seems too good to be true, in a sense. It seems like real-life fiction. Described as the biggest heist in history, just set the scene. How much money was stolen from the people of Malaysia in this one MDB scandal?
Well, at least $4.5 billion. We call it in the book one of the largest financial heists ever. And the reason is, you know, Bernie Madoff, he lost about $18 billion in investor money. But that was a pyramid scheme over 40 years. In this case, the money was literally taken overnight. And it was just you know, sent around the world and used to make Hollywood movies and buy mansions and buy friendships with famous people. It's a really incredible tale.
It was meant to, 1MDB was a sovereign wealth fund. It was meant to make the people of Malaysia richer. Did it do anything to benefit the people of Malaysia, or did the money just all flow one way into the pockets of the rich and famous?
No, it did absolutely nothing to benefit the people of Malaysia. I mean, one thing the book shows is how these sovereign wealth funds have become incredibly powerful. They have assets that are greater than hedge funds and private equity funds put together. And Joe Low, the Malaysian 27-year-old who ran this fund from behind the scenes, his great genius was in he got together with other sovereign wealth funds in the world, in the Middle East, and they sort of worked together to take the money. And it wasn't any proper oversight because everyone had the cover of governments, these kleptocratic governments that sort of that gave Joe Low the power to do what he did.
It's an extraordinary story that you describe. You describe this young man, this young Malaysian businessman, barely out of school. His name was Joe Low. No one really, you know, knew what he did or where he'd come from. No real track record. But he was able to leverage billions of dollars out of other countries' sovereign wealth funds. I don't think he was, his pitch then was, we're going to steal the money from Malaysia. They thought he was a bona fide, this was a bona fide, you know, beneficial deal that he was concocting.
Well, the crazy thing about this story is this wasn't even a traditional sovereign wealth fund. They raised the money from public markets. Now, this is all happening after the subprime crisis in America. The markets are down. You know, there's a recession going on, 2009, 2010. And they went to Goldman Sachs. And with Goldman Sachs' help, they raised billions of dollars on global bond markets. And they were able to do so because investors around the world were looking for yields, looking for high interest rates. And so they just raised billions overnight.
But Tom, as I read it, that was what was stunning about this. The timing was just post-GFC, and yet all those companies, Goldman Sachs and others, that were, you know, felt the heat through the GFC and the question marks over regulation were, I mean, their lending practices and their investing practices were completely irresponsible, if not shonky, weren't they?
Well, I think, you know, people hoped that some lessons had been learned from the global financial crisis. But I think what Billion Dollar Whale shows is that that's not the case. And, you know, Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman, who stepped down yesterday, actually, he had this whole policy of going into emerging markets after the crisis. And they actually called it monetizing the state, working with sovereign wealth funds to advise them and to help them raise money. But in some ways, you know, we call that bilking the state in our book in one chapter, because it's sort of ripping off emerging market funds that don't really know what they're doing, right?
So tell us about Joe Low, because he was the one who capitalized on people and governments that didn't know what they were doing. Tell us about the power of this young man, that he could create this fund basically for him to spend.
Well, Joe Low is basically probably the master networker, the best networker the world has ever seen. He could identify a person in a room who was powerful and work out what he could do for that person and how he could help them. So what he did is he put himself between powerful people, between sovereign wealth fund that he ran in Malaysia and the Prime Minister of Malaysia, the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, and powerful people in the Middle East. And then once he'd sort of taken the money, he also worked out who else he could help, and that included Leonardo DiCaprio, who wanted to make films. So Jolo pitched him $400 million in film financing and got to know him. He dated Miranda Kerr, the Australian supermodel, and she wanted to IPO her skincare line called Cora Organics, and so he said he'd help her with that. He always figured out what he could give people, and now, that's what was the source of his power.
I need you to describe for everyone listening the sort of degree of his spending, the lavishness of his parties and his wealth and the way he behaved, because really the parties you describe here are unbelievable.
Well, in the prologue, we describe what is described by Robin Leach, who knows about parties, as, you know, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. He describes it as the largest private party ever held. That's how we start the book. And that was Jolo's 2012 birthday party. You know, you've got Britney Spears bursting out of a fake birthday cake. You've got Leonardo DiCaprio rapping drunk on stage with Q-Tip. Basically, there were more people there than at an Oscars after party. And this was the power of his networking that I just described. He could get people to turn up to these things because he had so much money. I mean, because he'd taken so much money and he put on the most lavish extravaganzas anyone had ever seen.
Why didn't that kind of extravagance, because he kept it up for years, trigger alarm in people's minds, let alone, you know, the Prime Minister of Malaysia, but the people at Goldman Sachs and elsewhere too, and the sovereign wealth funds of UAE and other countries? Why didn't that put them on alert?
Well, another thing that Billion Dollar Whale shows is if you've got enough money, you can buy your way into any world, to any room, basically. So he bought his way into Hollywood. He became very good friends with a former partner at Goldman Sachs who helped raise the money. And, you know, he gave him so much business. He gave Goldman so much business that they missed the red flags. And whether it's willful ignorance or whether it's some sort of complicity, that's what investigators at the Department of Justice are looking into right now, because there's a criminal investigation into all of this that involves looking at Goldman Sachs and at others.
It's 23 past eight. Our guest is Tom Wright, co-author of Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, Hollywood and the World. Najib Razak, the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, has denied any wrongdoing, pleaded not guilty to all charges related to $681 million that was deposited in his personal account. His trial begins in February next year. His wife, Rosmah, is also expected to be charged. They both feature heavily in your telling of this tale. How much do you believe that Najib and Rosmah were in the know, or were they just victims, in a sense, of Jolo's way of operating?
No, 100% they were not victims. What Najib Razak gave to Jolo is political cover. He allowed him to run this fund from behind the scenes. Whether or not he knew that $4.5 billion or more was stolen is, you know, unknowable. He knew it was a slush fund. His wife, who was this Imelda Marcos-type figure, got a $27 million jewel and multiple other assets from Jolo, including mansions and whatnot. So definitely not the case that he didn't know at all, but he probably didn't have a 360-degree view of the fraud.
Najib Razak will face trial in February. What about Jolo? He's on the run, is that right?
Jolo,
where is he?
Jolo, as far as we know, I mean, we had visibility on him until July, was in China. Now, like I said, he's a master networker. After all of this came out in our paper and in the Sarawak report, which broke this story in 2015, Najib sent him abroad, and he's been living most of his time in China since then. He seems to have some sort of protection from the Chinese government, which probably relates to some deals that China did in Malaysia that also the current Malaysian government thinks was corrupt.
He's declared his innocence, and he says you've made a hasty decision to publish information, quote, without the benefit of evidence, and that the book was written with allegations disguised as fact and gossip passed off as legitimate reporting. What do you say to that?
It makes me laugh. I really love it. I mean, I spent 3 years of my life, I turned myself inside out to write this book. I mean, anyone who reads it will see the incredible level of detail we have. You can see in our author's note, we talked to over 100 people. We relied on investigative documents from around the world and investigators.
Did the authorities work with you?
We talked to authorities around the world. I mean, this is being investigated in Singapore, in Switzerland, in the US, in Malaysia and elsewhere. So, I mean, it's really gathering steam now.
There are reports that the film producers behind the film Crazy Rich Asians want to buy the rights, or in the process of buying the rights to Billion Dollar Whale, to bring this story to the big screen. It looks made for the big screen. Is that true?
Yeah, we already have a deal with Ivanhoe, which SK Global, which is the producers that made Crazy Rich Asians. So we're very excited about that.
Tom Wright, thank you very much for joining us. Tom Wright is co-author of Billion Dollar Whale, The Man Who Fooled Wall Street, Hollywood and the World. I have to say, it is a ripping read. You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 26 past 8.